This is State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Comedian Aparna Nancherla finds her humor by writing from the inside out. She talks openly about her struggles with anxiety and depression and is also well known for a kind of absurdist wit and introspective reflections.
I have a lot of opinions about food. For example, don't you think that any pizza can be a personal one if you cry while you eat it? I'm sorry to go political right away, but that is how I feel. Also, heads up to my friends. I've been calling pizza yoga for months now. So that is my sacred circle.
Aparna Nancherla and her stand-up album, Just Putting It Out There, and that was released last summer. In addition to stand-up, she's also tried her hand at comedy writing and acting. Aparna worked for Late Night with Seth Meyers, acted in the last season of Inside Amy Schumer, and is going to be in the upcoming seasons of Love and Master of None on Netflix. Aparna is going to be in the Triangle this Saturday to headline the NC Comedy Arts Festival and performing at the Arts Center in Carrboro. But first, she joins us in conversation. Aparna Nancherla, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I understand that you were a pretty shy kid growing up. How did you get your start in comedy?
Yeah, I was. I was very introverted. I read a lot. I think my mom was worried that I wouldn't survive in the world. Like, she would give me different exercises to be more confident. Like, I think she made me practice ordering pizzas on the phone at one point. That was one strategy. And then later she signed my sister and I up for public speaking classes. And I think that was maybe my first inkling of realizing that I felt more comfortable speaking in front of a group with sort of a more prepared plan than maybe like a one-on-one with a stranger at a party.
Well, it's one thing to get the toppings right for the various pizzas you're going to order, but then to get into comedy, when did you decide to do that?
So I noticed, like, through high school, I kind of, when I had to do presentations for class, I sort of skewed towards making them funny. Like, I found that easier and like a more comfortable way to present things. So I think I sort of already was interested in comedy writing at that point, but then wasn't sure how to even get into that world. And then I think my first summer home from college, a friend and I went to like an open mic just to watch. It was like a free open mic at like a hotel bar, and we noticed not everyone was like doing stand-up at a professional level, so we were like, oh, we should both try that. So I think that was the first summer I tried it and sort of realized that something clicked for me and I really enjoyed it. But then I sort of put it on the back burner and didn't pursue it regularly until after I graduated from college and moved back home.
And then when did you feel like you had your first big break?
I feel like my first big break, I mean, a lot of people, I think when they start comedy, their first goal is just to like be able to support yourself full time doing it. So my first chance to do that was my first writing job, which was for a show on FX called Totally Biased. It was a late night talk show with a sort of very left wing San Francisco comic named W. Kamau Bell, who hosted it. It focused a lot on social justice issues, but sort of through a comedic Daily Show-esque viewpoint.
Mm-hmm. And so, but you were writing then, and you'd been doing some stand-up as well, right?
Yeah. So usually a writing job is like a full-time job. So that sort of was when comedy became my full-time job. But yeah, and then since then I've been lucky enough to keep only doing comedy.
Openly about your struggles with anxiety and depression. I've got a clip here from some of your stand-up. Let's listen.
I actually find it weirder to not have anxiety than to have it, because I feel like if you're not scared, you're not paying attention, you know? If you open a newspaper today and you skim the headlines, you're just like, seems cool. It's like, what? Everything's on fire! Are you kidding me? And sometimes people are like, oh, well, you know, there's nothing to fear but fear itself. Have you checked out some of Fear's work? Pretty much churning out the hits since forever, making a lot of great points. If you don't have anxiety, to me, what it feels like is there's like an edgy improv group in your brain that just needs like a one-word suggestion to spin like countless scenarios that no one's comfortable with.
Aparna Nancherla and her stand-up album Just Putting It Out There, released last summer. She is headlining the NC Comedy Arts Fest. It's going to perform, it'll be performing at DSI in Chapel Hill this Saturday. Other performances as well. Check our website for those. What about this, talking about your anxiety, and you also talk about depression. When did you decide to do that?
Well, I think I've always gravitated towards comics who are pretty open about their struggles with mental health and are okay with getting vulnerable on stage. Like, I've always looked up to, like, Maria Bamford, and Paul F. Tompkins gets pretty personal in his work, and Patton Oswalt. So I think I always was sort of looked up to people who are able to do that. I didn't know if I had anything necessarily to add to the conversation, since so many people were doing it well, but I first started writing about it sort of because I was in a depressive rut and I was having trouble really creating anything. So I was like, well, I guess if this is where you're at, just try to write about that. So I kind of wrote about it just to for the sake of trying to get myself out of it. And, you know, it wasn't necessarily that that was the only solution, but I did realize, like, talking about it on stage, like, it would really resonate with people, and they responded favorably to it. So I think I sort of continued down that path.
Does your writing, I mean, is it different if you're in a high state of anxiety or depression? Is it different than I mean, is it better? Or would you rather be in that state to write, or does it not matter to the outcome, the product?
I wouldn't say it helps. Like, I know there is that tortured artist sort of trope, and I wouldn't say that, you know, having depression, anxiety is like what fuels my writing. But I think people with that prone to that sort of neurotic mindset do look at the world in a certainly like sort of hyper analytical way that can lend itself to comedy. But I wouldn't say, like, if you don't have depression, you're at a disadvantage.
Well, but I want to follow up on what was in that little clip that we played. I mean, you just called it a sort of a neurotic mind state, as though that's the abnormal. But really, shouldn't we all be a little bit out of our minds right now? I mean, that it's a joke, but it's kind of true. I mean, isn't there something wrong with people who are happy-go-lucky in the age of Trump, let us say?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of jealous of that level of, you know, being not impacted by your surroundings. But at the same time, like, now most of my social circle is like somehow involved in comedy or something creative. And that mindset definitely skews towards very hyper aware of what's going on, very sensitive to a lot of issues. So I think, yeah, I think for me, it does seem more abnormal to be kind of removed from your, you know, the world we live in and your day-to-day surroundings.
You collaborate with another comedian on a podcast called Blue Women Group, and there you talk about daily experiences of depression. Tell us about that idea and working with another actor, another comedian, to put that together.
So, yeah, so we made that podcast. It was just like a 3-episode sort of mini-series. But it was me and another comedian, Jacqueline Novak, who's based in New York. And she actually just published a book on depression, sort of memoir-like essays that came out last year. But she and I initially bonded over both being depressives, and we met through doing stand-up. And I think we started just like texting frequently throughout the day, just like updates of where we were, because often like depression can kind of hinder just doing regular day-to-day activities. So we kind of had each other as like phone a friends or text a friends to sort of motivate each other, just like relate to each other. And then I think we were like, oh, maybe there's a way to make this into like a podcast or like translate these experiences to people. Because we noticed that like with mental health podcasts, a lot of times it's like interviews about someone's, you know, their path with mental health over their whole lifetime. But we didn't hear as much about the like day to day of just coping with it. So we were kind of interested in exploring that area.
We've got a clip here. This is from a guided meditation that you lead at the beginning of the episode of the Blue Women Group. Let's listen.
Maybe you're staring at a coworker's face, wondering if they're real. Maybe you're in a Aeron chair.
Your back is fully supported.
Fully supported, and yet you feel hatred for life.
That's okay.
Maybe you feel, you look around, you see decay.
Decay and never-ending pain and despair and always being not enough.
Joyless existence represented by this hellscape made of decent materials in the modern world. And yet, you still got me and Aparna.
We are here to see you through your day.
That's a clip from the podcast Blue Women Group, co-hosted by comedians Jacqueline Novak and Aparna Nancherla. Aparna's headlining the NC Comedy Arts Fest at the Arts Center in Carrboro this Saturday. We've got the information at our website, stateofthings.org. So you also sort of take a look at the kind of self-helpy side of all of this, too, the ways in which therapies are attracted to these various disorders.
Yeah, it's interesting. Because we have a culture that hasn't fully embraced mental health as like a maybe as weighted as, you know, different medical disorders or problems that people struggle with. But at the same time, we also are kind of obsessed with achievement and bettering ourselves and growth. So it is this weird sort of juxtaposition where people, you know, self-help industries well funded, but people still, there is a stigma to how crazy you can be, quote unquote.
Right. You don't necessarily, I know you don't consider yourself a political comedian, but you did write a piece in November of 2015 about the dangers of taking Donald Trump too lightly. Tell us what inspired you to write that. The fact that he's crazy or no? I don't know. Maybe that wasn't what inspired you. Maybe it was his speeches and the kind of racist and Islamophobic things he said. But you tell me what you heard.
Yeah, I mean, I think there, I definitely could see plenty of exploration of his mental health state, but I also, like everyone else, was wrapped up in the election cycle and sort of what was happening, and I think as much as anyone else, a little blindsided by the results of it. And I think with comedy, you know, it's often seen as like, people think of themselves as like truth tellers or people saying, being able to say the things that other people are thinking but can't say. And I think especially now where it's kind of like it feels more like an imperative than it has in the past, like it feels like you really have to be more thoughtful and careful about what you want to do with your time on stage just because there is so many or there are so many like grim things happening that at least the climate right now is unlike anything I've experienced in my time living in the United States, and I was born here. And I think that something about that makes me as a creative person, and I think other people feel like more like we need to be more responsible about what messages we're sending out and what we want to, who we can reach with our words.
Well, what would that mean for you in particular? Would you change the direction or the style of your comedy? I mean, have you thought about what that actually means for you and your writing and your stand-up?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have been talking more openly about the news and what's going on. And sometimes it's not favorably received just in that I think a lot of people are going to comedy shows right now to be distracted from it. But at the same time, I feel responsible as a comedian to try to, you know, talk about it and keep it in the dialogue because it feels more problematic to pretend that it's not happening, mm-hmm. even if there isn't necessarily an immediate solution.
We also talked about the how-to, and we had a comedian Hari Kondabolu on the show just last week, and we were talking about how Indian comedians, South Asian comedians, are often expected to put on certain characters or accents. I wonder if you have thought about that and how that affects you and your experience in being on stage.
Yeah, I think when I first started, you know, I was a South Asian female comedian, and there wasn't necessarily anyone else who looked like me or sounded like me on the scene where I started in D.C. So I think in that sense, I was lucky that I didn't have any sort of person that people were comparing me to. That sometimes happens with minorities. But I came to comedy from sort of a, you know, as we spoke about earlier, like living inside my head and sort of observing the world from the corner. So I think that's what interested me to write about and to be sort of like an observer of the world. And I feel like sometimes with racial comedy or cultural comedy, it's more from the outside in, where it's like, this is what I look like and this is how I've been treated because of it. So I think I sort of have always come at it from the opposite way. So I just haven't gravitated towards writing about that stuff. And I think we're lucky in that we have a lot of South Asians in Hollywood right now, like Aziz Ansari and Mindy Kaling, who have sort of done similar things in their work of not making their culture like the focal point. So I think that has opened up definitely leeway for people coming after them.
Great to talk with you, Aparna. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Aparna Nancherla headlines the NC Comedy Arts Festival this weekend, performing at the Arts Center in Carrboro, 9 o'clock. We've got the information at our website, stateofthings.org. Also have an update to our story earlier this week. Felipe de Jesus Molina Mendoza, you know, Mexican-born man living in Durham. He was facing deportation. We talked to him Monday. Deportation hearing was Tuesday, and the deportation has been stayed, so he's been allowed to stay in the U.S. a little bit longer, pending his appeals court decision on the asylum case, and that could be months away. And that's our program, The State of Things. Thank you for listening. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.